Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Afternoon, everybody. This is Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith. We're live radio having some technical difficulties this morning, this afternoon. And so we're going to go ahead with the show as normal. So you might not know, you didn't hear the intro song, this, that, and the other. It might be a second before I can get Stacy logged in if she's on. But we are going to be talking about today the last part of this five-part series we've been having on being Democratic and hopeless in Georgia. We've all seen, we've heard different conversations take place over the last 5 weeks about what we've heard that's wrong with the Democratic Party of Georgia, what we would like to see with the Democratic Party of Georgia, all the different things that we as citizens and Democrats here would like to see happen. And it's been interesting. We've heard that people talking about different things that are going on, and look like we're getting the board finally back up now. Stacy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, baby?
Yeah, we doing fine. We having some technical difficulties over here this morning.
I see that. But look, this is grassroots. This is purely grassroots. This is how we do it. So,
Acting over here.
I'm used to glitches. I got AT&T. I'm used to glitches. So
yeah, so I'm sitting here. I think this wasn't the internet. This might have been the computer. So I was trying to get my tablet up so I could run the show, and I hadn't ran the show from the tablet in a long time. So now I got the computer finally got up. So it was like, okay, here we go. I can get Stacy on. So we missed the intro music. Y'all, half of y'all don't understand what it's saying anyway, so. But. Let's see who this call is.
It's probably Monroe.
Scout.
What's going on? Who am I hollering?
What's up, buddy? This is your pal down in Savannah, Georgia, man.
All right, Savannah in the house.
What's going on?
It's Chuck Fagan, man. What's up, brother?
Chuck, we're connected on Facebook. How you doing?
I'm good.
Well,
I figured I'd just call in and say hey.
Okay. Our show today is, if you notice, the title is Four Together Not, and all every activist and anybody who's ever been to any protest should be able to finish off that sentence.
That's
Four
right.
Together Not, one
That's
step
right.
back, you know.
That's
so
right.
This is the theme of the show. We want to talk about how Democrats are going to move forward here in Georgia, even though we know we have our internal problems.
Right.
We know there's some things that can be done better. But at the end of the day, we want to move forward. We just don't want to have a victory. We just don't want to win. We want to win with our dignity. We want to win with our platform in place, and we want to win with us knowing that it was a true victory. We didn't have to play any tricks. It wasn't some fluke that we came.
I think above all, we want to win with a progressive.
Right, exactly.
Right.
We don't want we don't want this watered down version of Dixiecrats and Dinos.
But people need to understand that the progressive platform is what a lot of people actually champion. Whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican, an independent, a libertarian, when you present progressive policies, a majority of the people resonate towards this. And this is not, you know, we want to win with the best quality candidates. That's
well, I got 2 points to make to y'all, because that's why I called in. I posted this on Facebook earlier today, that it seems like a long time ago now, Scott, but it was Georgia activists that went to South Carolina in that primary with Hillary Clinton in 2007, 2008, and turned that state out for Barack Obama and probably won him the presidency simply because he had a first three-state win. The second and more important point I want to make is that the Republicans here in Georgia have done us a favor. Brian Kemp and the rest of these southern states moving these primaries for an SEC primary have done the Democrats as much as the Republicans a favor in making Georgia more relevant. And my hope is that the Bernie Sanders of the world start to pay attention to that and come down here, because that's the only way, even if Hillary ultimately wins the nomination, it's going to take a few primary losses for her to understand that she's not going to get coronated. I think that's the same thing we went through last year as a state last year. You remember, Scout? We coordinated a few candidates.
Right.
And you worked out so well for us.
Well, I think what's important to note that today, or I believe it was yesterday or today, South Carolina AFL-CIO came out in favor of Bernie Sanders. And if you remember, Bernie Sanders came down here last year, and that was kind of a hint on the type of strategy that he's going to use. He's going to use a Southern strategy. If you remember, he came to South Carolina, he went to North Carolina, he came to Atlanta, he went to, I think, Alabama. He's got a Southern strategy in plan, and it can work. It definitely can work. And I get a little frustrated at the Democrats who are acting as if he's running as a Democrat, and he didn't have to. He didn't have to. He could have run as an independent, and then we could have had that Ralph Nader comparison. And I kind of debate that about spoilers. I have a different perspective on that. But, you know, I'm getting a little frustrated at people who are acting like if you vote for Bernie Sanders, it is the end of the world as we know it. You'll be giving the Republicans a win. And that same meme that you keep hearing, he can't win. And I got to call bullshit on that.
You know, and I call it also, because I'm very open about my support of Bernie Sanders. And people who know me know why I'm not a major Hillary fan. But at the same time, like I've told them, if she's the nominee, just like I was about Michelle Nunn, if she's the nominee, I'm gonna put both feet in on it, and I'm gonna run. I'm gonna run like crazy to help her win.
That's the same thing, Scott. That's the same thing they said about Barack Obama in 2007. They said,
exactly,
if you vote for Barack Obama, it's going to be historic. We're going to have a historic nominee, and he's going to lose to whoever the Republicans put up. It's the same thing they said in 2007. And
but
I just don't see
hell.
That.
But see, I'm catching hell. I'm black, and I'm a woman, so I'm expected to default to Hillary. And I am catching hell for being a Sanders supporter.
And you know, as a African American, we are actually expected to be defaulting toward Hillary. I mean, I've had several people who are running for office, who are presently running for office. The first thing they come to me is with, "I'm a supporter of Hillary Clinton." And I'd be like, "Well, that's nice. I'm not. That's nice. I'm not." And then they get this look on their face like, "I'm confused."
You're right.
Aren't
like you put the book on the table or something?
Like, no, I'm sorry, but I'm a progressive. Okay, I mean, really. If you look at every kind of, particularly if you look at my track record of who the people that I normally support, I support the progressive, a clear progressive, each and every time. I mean, so I'm not with the mainstream centrist Democratic message, because that centrist Democratic message is very attached to Wall Street.
Let's take a step back. Let's take a step back and look at the bigger picture. Over the last 6-7 years. What are the two biggest social movements that have arisen in this country? The Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. And somebody who can bridge the divide and find the 3 or 4 or 5 uniting common issues between those groups is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I think that's where Bernie Sanders is headed. Because
right.
if you look
because
at the Tea Party, they're frustrated. They started with the frustration of the bailouts, with which the Democrats had the same problems with the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And I work in banking. And I'm telling you that as a banker.
But look
you know?
How the narrative came when Occupy and the Tea Party, and you can, you know, a lot of people think when you say Tea Party, there's some certain things that people think. When you talk about the original Tea Party and when they came about, the establishment on both sides immediately deemed both to be the fringe, even though they brought valid issues to the table or to their respective parties. Because all of these, both movements came out of the party, both of the major political parties shifting so far that a portion of their base has rebelled, and they are a course correction. Now, we can argue about the Tea Party and whether the direction that once it got co-opted by Freedom Works and some of these other groups took, I'm talking about the original Tea Party before they were co-opted. And Occupy did the same thing in shifting it. And I have to give props. Before Occupy, there was U.S. Uncut. That was the first movement that started to talk about Wall Street, about how the banks, you know, the tax issue and how corporations are getting away with not paying their fair share, which evolved into a part that Occupy came out of that. So all of these movements were created, but the mainstream media, along with the establishment and those very serious people in Washington who are sitting up there looking at data, they have no idea, they have no connection to grassroots, are dictating what's going on in our local and state politics. And we've reached
the I have no argument against the mainstream media point there, but Scout, you know as well as I do, we have yet to have the Democratic Party version of Frank Luntz in our party, and we have yet to be all on a one accord, and that's the problem of a party that has a lot of ideas.
That's one thing we need to be working for, because
sure.
Wait. We keep waiting and talking about we need this to come in. I keep hearing we need messaging, we need strategy, we need somebody to show up. Nobody's showing up to do this. No one is.
And this is why, though. And I was just going
to
get to the point of why. The show up and it's not happened. Why nobody showed up? Why hasn't it happened yet? Because this is the thing. We are waiting for somebody else. When, let's say Barack Obama told us this when he got elected, we are the change that we are waiting for.
Yeah.
I agree with him on that. Part of Georgia. I'm going to start with that with my state committee members. My fellow state committee members will talk a whole bunch of stuff. Well, excuse me, this is down south and dirty, and I'm going to say it like, we will talk a whole bunch of shit about we need reform, we need this, we need that. We step in a room together, we go in awe of whatever it is that distracts us when we get in the room together, and we vote for the status quo continuously. Back in 2013...
Well, I'm a state committee member with you now, Scal. You ready to impeach some officers? Because we just reelected them in a landslide.
I've advocated it. And we
Let's give you a point blank example, Scout. The first vice chair of the Democratic Party spent her time disqualifying candidates for Young Democrats of Georgia president so that an employee of the Democratic Party of Georgia could be unopposed in an election. So the political director for the Democratic Party of Georgia, a paid position, now has a vote on the executive committee, which pays him. So think about that. Now, when I sent a letter to the chairman and CC'd the executive director, I have yet to receive a response. This is 3 months ago, 2 months ago.
Well, Scout, we kind of know that from the Dr. Rad campaign.
And
the two people she discredited and had disqualified, one is the 5th Congressional District Chairman and former head of the Young Democrats of Atlanta, and one is in his third term as county commissioner, was one of the youngest ever elected county commissioners in Georgia, and he's down here in Hinesville.
Justin Frazier, was running for, I did not know that.
Yeah.
We are seeing a stacking of decks of these Democratic committee organizations, but we're also seeing the stacking of the deck of some progressive organizations because, you know, I saw it with MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org basically suffered an internal hive collapse because the Democratic Party of or the Democratic Party inundated MoveOn chapters, local chapters with operatives and basically sucked the life out. When the founders of MoveOn walked away a few years ago, then and they moved on to a petition-based platform, you know, we started seeing a lot of Democratic-based rhetoric and a shift to move, you know, because MoveOn was seen as the wild hair of the progressive, you know, when you need somebody to come out and wild out, usually MoveOn was that organization to do that on the progressive side. And at one time, they did have a very smart inside game. When Joan and Wes left, MoveOn, that collapsed. And I saw those same Democrats you said that went to South Carolina to help engineer that win for Obama. They came in and took over MoveOn. It collapsed. OSA, after Obama won and everybody, whoever won on the campaign, whoever didn't get a job in D.C., that collapsed.
But who was OSA? Who was OSA in Georgia? But who was the head of OSA in Georgia after
Richard
the 08
McDaniel.
Election? The same one who is now president of the Young Democrats and political director.
The same one that
person.
Every activist in Atlanta. You
okay.
Ask them
so,
if they
can
they will not work with him.
Campaign.
But they will
what,
not work with
say,
him. The Democrats pick the one person who cannot bridge the gap between the activists and the Democratic side, because although very few will say it, I will be one of the ones to say it. I was personally burnt by Richard McDaniel. No one on the activist side in Metro Atlanta will mess with Richard McDaniel because they've been burnt, and he will do anything to win. This is not about the This is not about the people of Georgia. This is not about the issue. This is about power. This is about money. And they are going to the people who are willing to do that. So for those listening out there, yes, you have to be on the part of good, but you have to learn who you're messing with, and game recognizes game. And you have to understand who you're messing with. And it would be great if we can work around this, but there's one. But in order to have common ground, you got to have two people coming to the table who have the same intent.
Think about this. For the first time in probably all three of our lifetimes, not just mine. I'm a young man. You know, I'm not even 30 yet. But probably in your lifetimes, there is no Democrat on the executive committee of DPG outside of Atlanta towards Augusta, Savannah, right? Except for DuBose, who spends more time in Atlanta than in Dublin.
Living the lifestyle.
You know. As the chairman of the rule council, I recognize this, and this is one of the things that I had a conversation with a former statewide candidate, and I'm not going to mention names because I want to stay on good terms with this person. But we were talking about this whole how we have the caucuses, you know, are trying to do work and not be only two caucuses that you see major work come out of in the DPG, the LGBTs, which I love them for should be the model of how a caucus should operate.
Because they're doing the work and they understand that. They understand how to get their agenda on the table and
put. And you see the disabilities caucus is kicking in.
Yes.
Even being the chair of the rule council, I have not been able to kick it in to the level that they can kick it in, because guess what? I've had a very, very hard time. I've asked for certain resources that I can't get. I need email.
The last few years, we have had an ITP-OTP divide, inside the perimeter, outside the perimeter. And I think that's just honest. And I think unless we're willing to confront that, I'll give you two examples from last year's election, right? Two examples. We had a two-time Democratic mayor from, Oglethorpe, right? Ran for Secretary of State. Now, I respect Doreen, and I love Doreen, but if you're talking about playing a field of a statewide team of candidates for the statewide offices, We went up to Athens and got Keith Hurd, you know, so he would beat what's-her-name from Statesboro. But at least he was from Athens, you know. We needed more people from outside the perimeter. And I'll go back to the same guy we're talking about with the head of YD. You know, here in the 1st Congressional District, same thing like with Dr. Rad, progressive candidate, progressive white female candidate. And what does Richard McDaniel do? He plays both campaigns against each other the entire primary and the organized labor behind both of them. And you know, a woman who wins the Democratic primary but loses the runoff, you know, she resigned from the state committee 3 days after that, and she lost probably nothing to do. We lost a good Democrat that day because of that. Same thing with that mayor from Oglethorpe. We probably lost a good Democrat that day.
Same thing with Dr. Red. Dr. Red does not want to play in politics at all anymore. You got several of some of the statewide candidates that ran, including the one we just talked about from Statesboro. I don't know if she's completely out, but I don't think she wants to play ball anymore. I mean, you got, and then you have some of our longtime workers who have worked their way up through the party talking about resigning their positions in the party. It started out with Gina Brown might be, you know, considered to be a little bit of a loose cannon, but the woman
she's
was
unique. Let's leave it at the word she's unique.
And I'm not going to talk about others' plans, but there's other people who are talking about resigning.
Oh, they're doing.
You know,
I don't know what they're doing to them. Because
people
who act like they beat them up. Like, look, they slept with them and didn't leave the money on the nightstand table. That, like, they beat them up and took the lunch money. What are they doing to these people out there?
Before we need to be able to move forward, we need these toxic personalities that we've engaged in the party. Now, true enough, Mike Burline might be a criminal. Okay? Mm. Burline was a criminal.
But who elected him?
Thank
right?
you.
Go back to his chairman's election. And who elected him? All the party establishment did. Right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's on the establishment.
And then guess what they did? They took him with the first time Burline didn't have any problems till he bucked with the DNC. When he bucked, and then it was all over the ballot situation with Obama be fighting the ballot, being put on the ballot here in Georgia, Burline decided he was going to take a stand on that, and the DNC acted a fool on him.
Well, you don't give them the ammunition to come after
you
by ringing off your client.
Right. So I mean, it was a dirty situation all the way around. The scum was recruiting the scum, and then the scum would act like they were clean.
But if you're ripping off your clients, you need to tell me you ain't going to take a dollar from me.
We've gotten no better. We've asked for reform, and we got lip service about reform. But every time
the end of the day, Scott, the DPG is a jobs program for those in the know.
Yes, it is an employment. It is a recruitment center for those who want to go to, you know, be in politics on a higher level. It is your training field. It is your their job. They're headhunters, basically. But they're looking out for just as only the elite.
But then where do they go, though? Where do they go? They go away from Georgia.
It doesn't matter where they go. It's about money and power. And it's got nothing to do with the issues. It's got nothing to do with people. This is what people keep confusing. Their objective and our objective are two different things. So we can never have common ground as long as we have that dynamic. So I don't disagree with that,
but my point is that if we're going to pay and we're going to spend all this money on these people's jobs, the very least we could retain that talent for Georgia. And, I mean, I'm not saying I disagree with your point there, but, I mean, my God, at least we could have some people staying in Georgia and doing some work.
They go up north to Chicago. They go out to California. And they go to Ohio. They go out to all the Democratic super states. And then we're left down, okay, we come back through again. We got to train some more novices who have connections to the guys that just left. We bring them in, but we got people who are busting their asses
on the ground every day, people who were born and raised in Georgia, or people who've lived in Georgia for decades, people who have put a stake in Georgia turning blue, those people get overlooked. Those people get the nose turned up at them. Those people get then we get the foot up the ass.
And that's why they're turning to Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, we in Georgia are like abused children, afraid to say who's doing the bad touching to us. And Bernie Sanders has come in, and people are resonating towards him because he is going just like he is appealing to the disenfranchised. He is appealing.
But we have to appeal. We have to fight back against that notion from the establishment that he can't win. Remember, there is a blue wall. All right, 270 electoral votes wins the presidency, and any Democratic candidate is guaranteed to get 220 to 235 votes off rip because the blue wall is not going to break. Are you telling me a man whose policies resonate with 70% of the country can't win 35 electoral votes in some swing states? I don't think so. I think he's a shoo-in.
He can. This is all part of psychological warfare. I mean, we all know, Scout, you, Chuck, and I, we all know that this is a part of the campaign. It's basically to psych you out. You know, it's kind of like shock and awe. That this is what we're going to see for the next couple of months. They're going to try to psych us out. Some people are going to drink the Kool-Aid, some aren't.
This is true. They did. And again, if you are in Georgia, and you paid any attention to the United States Senate campaign last year, they gave us massive amount of Kool-Aid, made us had us drink it. None is a shoo-in. We had fake polling that was telling us she was up. It is nowhere in hell, because if that many different polling groups failed as miserably as they did, then those people should never be in business again, because up until the last 2 weeks of the election, none was up in nearby every poll we saw. For her to be in the completely opposite direction by at least 2 extra points when it all was tallied out. None should have been.
But he did only, no offense, Scott, he did only get like 5%.
But I'm saying, still. But we had her winning by that same amount.
Yeah.
Right, and with Dr. Rab, we were out financed, and we just didn't have enough of the people behind us. We got to own a little bit of that. Some of it is
we do.
But when you look at the whole fact that the vote that Steve Miles pulled, that Dr. Rab pulled, that was, although it was not as significant, it wasn't, you know, we tend to look at things from an all or nothing perspective. There were danger signs in that election that got ignored. That was a danger sign. The stuff that we heard on social media from our friends, our neighbors during that campaign, those were danger signs. And you know what? They were like, we don't care, because you know what dazzled them? The money. All the money that flowed into it wasn't about whether Michelle Mellon won or not. It was whether the illusion was, because the money was flowing. There was stake on everybody's plate along with them beans and rice. We had money coming from all different states. That whole election was concocted in back rooms up in Washington, D.C., out in California. It had nothing to Chicago. There was nothing to do with Georgia there. They brought it to Georgia said it was all for it because we were broke.
Now, I'm fixing to put an angle on this that once I say this, somebody's probably going to want to cut my neck.
Oh, Scout, I can guarantee
that. I'm finna go there now, because, and I'm going to use an example. My candidate that I ran for state senate, Brian Roslin, was indicted about a month ago. For stealing money from the Little White House Foundation in Warm Springs, Georgia, primarily to fund his campaign. Okay, now in this indictment, the Attorney General said that the whole point of that campaign was a racket. That's why they charged him with racketeering. It was the whole point for that whole campaign for him to do that. Now, I submit to you, some of these campaigns in Georgia and some of the consultancies that are running these campaigns are running rackets. They have no intent on winning elections for their candidates. They all about trying to get the money because they get the money, they get the notoriety, they get the resume built, and they can move on. It's a racket. And I sometimes believe that some people that are operating in the Democratic Party of Georgia are running a racket. Because all you got to do is make it good enough. Let's make it competitive. It doesn't matter if we win or lose. Money's going to flow in if we market it right. If we give the right amount of PR, the right spin, then how important this race is, people will run their money and we will eat. We will eat, like you said, there'll be steak on that plate with those beans and rice.
Because some of the strategies
that you've seen some people put out there, you know that we all know. It's like, I keep hearing this one thing every time I heard it all last year. Well, we can get mayors. Well, we all know that mayors are 1% return. Nobody wasn't trying to put no money into the field game. Nobody wasn't trying to put money into the field. Nobody wasn't trying to do what we really needed for them to do. Nobody was trying. It was all about the things that made it look good. It was all about the show. It was the show. And the show, but the show had no substance behind it because everybody wanted to make their money.
Right, and it wasn't just the political party because, Scout, you're more of an insider on the DPT side. I'm a little bit more of an insider on the activist side. And I got to tell you, you know, I worked with nonprofits last election season, and I hated it because I felt like I had a muzzle on my mouth. Well, I did have a muzzle on my mouth. Because of the nature of my work, had to be nonpartisan, voter engagement, I couldn't say shit. And there was that whole thing with the money. It just collusion between the political party and these nonprofits. And we had a coalition, you know, there's a coalition of groups, pro-Georgia, that are made up of some Democratic-leaning or Democratic-favorable groups. They're progressive groups, but there was a lot of money that flowed into the pro-Georgia table last session. And, you know, the Georgia Project, they were part of the pro-Georgia table.
To get us back on track. So what we understand is we know now what the problems are.
How do we fix it?
Okay. How do we fix it?
I got a really good suggestion. And this will clear up 99.9% of the problem. Stop being greedy. That'll clear up everything. Do the right thing. This is part of my 5-point plan for America. Act right. Stop lying. Stop cheating. Stop being greedy. If we could just do those, and they're very simple things, and they're easy, simple and easy once you know how. But if we start doing that, that'll clear up a whole lot of our problems. We don't need to have a dissertation or sit down and have a study about what went wrong. If we do those simple things, oh, it'll be fabulous here.
So, Chuck, what you got to say on that?
You know, I'm trying to keep it local. I mean, I'm on a state. It is local.
You're talking about it getting deep, it is local. Yeah. So, from your perspective, because the first congressional district and outside of DeKalb County, the next probably most important county in the state of Georgia is probably for the Democrats is probably Chatham.
Yeah.
Then you start talking about Clark and Fulton and Richmond counties, and we start talking about, you know, Lowndes and Daugherty. But outside of DeKalb County, when we talk about sheer numbers, we probably look at next between Chatham and Fulton County are probably the strongest Democratic strongholds we got outside the metro. Chatham County. Mm-hmm. So how do we change that in Chatham County? Because it's going to have to change locally before we can take Atlanta back.
Well, you know, we've got to take this inequality argument and connect it to the crime and poverty argument that is really killing us. I mean, here in Chatham County in Savannah, Georgia, we have the highest homicide rate in 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We've had 50 homicides in the last 15 months.
Wow.
You know, and the white folks here,
Wait.
Yeah, they want to subscribe to the broken.
Are we talking about police related homicides or just, you know,
people killing each other?
We're talking about people killing each other. Now,
okay,
we have had two or three homicides with police involved. I mean, you know, we had the Chatham County Jail kill a 22-year-old student in January.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and, you know, we had a situation last August where a, you know, in the police's defense, a four-time felon in custody was not searched properly and inside of the police vehicle pulled out a handgun and then was shot five times by a police officer. So, you know, that's a dicey situation where, you know, look, in the heat of the moment, guy did have a gun, you know, but somebody should have lost their pension and got kicked off the force for not searching properly. I mean, that's the bottom line there.
Maybe the gun was never there to begin with. I don't know.
You know, you never really know.
I mean,
you know,
we're kind of digressing a bit. But something we need to talk about.
But again, Savannah's had a 26% poverty rate for 10 years. So if you can't
mm-hmm.
connect a 26% poverty rate to highest, you know, homicide rate, I mean, it's to the point the conditions for the bottom 20% in this country have deteriorated to the point where a life in jail is no worse or better than the life that they have to live on the outside. And I think if we don't address that head on, there's no hope in solving the issue of crime in this country. We have the most citizens locked up per capita of any country in the world. And, you know, we wonder why, you know, there's a deficit problem. You know, we don't have enough of our citizens being productive to expand GDP. And I don't care what your position on it is, but you know what? I'd much rather be going after young black kids for tax evasion than them selling a drug that is no worse or better than alcohol, which kills thousands of people in this country per year. I'm tired of the drug war. I think my generation is going to be big on that in this 2016 election. You know, I don't think we're looking for full legalization yet, but I mean, in Georgia, we've got to move to decriminalization in the next 2 years. It's unacceptable if we don't.
We need to be talking about moving forward because, see, moving forward, we look at the things that if you read any of the press releases that comes out of the DPG, they're always attacking the Republicans. I have no problem with attacking Republicans. I love attacking Republicans. Elephant hunting is my sport. But at the same time, put out a press release supporting, talking about how Democrats are supporting our platform. Put out press releases talking about inequality in the state of Georgia. Put out press releases talking about how, you know, prison reform is going to take place. Talk about what we care about, because if you listen to Democrats across the state, they're talking about what the Democratic Party talks about nothing, but he's been to the state once, I think, maybe once.
He's not even declared candidate yet.
Yeah, we're talking about people who are not Georgian, and for us to first move forward, we need to start talking about Georgians and the Georgian Democratic base, the Georgian progressive base. And talking about the things we care about, because if you talk to people in the rural, and I'm talking about outside of the cities and outside the perimeter, we talking about outside of Savannah, outside of Macon, outside of Columbus. We talking about the people who are in Fitzgerald and the folks in Waycross, the folks in Twiggs County, them type of folks. If you talk to the average white voter in those areas and ask them what the Democrats stand for, all they can tell you, they want to take my gun, they like killing babies, and they hate God.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we are complicit.
But that's not who we are. Because if you ask that same white voter, you know, about how are your medical bills affecting your finances, they'll tell you, hey, my mama or my dad, you know, just got that cancer, and them bills are stacking up on us, this, that, and other. So somebody relieving your health care problems, the affordability of your health care problem would be great, wouldn't it? Yeah. Well, we have an affordable care. What is that? They call that Obamacare. Oh, no, they told me that Obamacare bad. Something who they told them.
Well,
but remember our Senate nominee would not even say whether or not she voted for the man.
And that's,
thank you.
That killed her. That killed her. I mean,
because
you jumped all over her for that.
Right, and I know that Dr. Rad talked, when Dr. Rad went into the rural areas that he talked, and Dr. Rad didn't care who he was talking to. He was talking to Democrats, Republicans, he didn't care. And when he got to talking to the people about what he believed in, and the same thing went for Steen, and the same thing went for Todd Robinson, when they talked to folks in the rural about health care and the things that are of a progressive nature that were really important to people, it resonated with them. The only problem they had, the only problem we had was that, shoot, we had to get out of the primary first. If we could have got out, if either one of those candidates had gotten nominated, you would have seen a lot of Republicans voting for them because it was, they told them directly what these Democratic policies that the Democrats support, how they affected these people in their regular life. Stop the grandstanding on policy, because nobody in rural Georgia really, gay marriage, I support it. I support marriage equality, but it does not affect the me putting food on my table. And those are the things that people in Georgia are worried about. How am I going to put food on my table? Marriage equality doesn't deal with that. Okay? You need me. So we have to deal with those issues of bread and butter.
Here's the thing, at least talking from Chatham County's perspective, there is an economic argument here to be made for marriage equality, simply because we're a destination city. And here's where I really fall on it. I'm not really sure that the Constitution does provide for the government to tell every church that they have to allow gay marriage in there. But I certainly don't think that the public spaces, the Forsyth Parks, the squares downtown, I certainly don't think that those are of any off limits to, you know, a gay couple seeking to get married. You know, I mean, that's really where I fall on the issue, and that's probably not as liberal as some in our party.
Right, but what I'm getting at is that the message that we as the Democrats constantly beat the drum on are not the issues that are grabbing. They are polarizing issues. They are real good for fundraising, but they're not good for exciting the base, because the base is the average Georgian who is out there working, who makes under $35,000 a year, who is struggling to put food on his table, who is him or her struggling to pay rent. They are living paycheck to paycheck. Those people could care less about marriage equality, because hell, some of them can't even afford to get straight married, much less gay married.
Yeah, and then you have
right.
Black church that has, you know, a significant portion of the black population, Democrats, who sit there, and you have some of them right now. You have some of them who are black leaders, you know, civil rights leaders. You'd be surprised at what comes out of the mouth of these people when the camera and the microphones ain't in front of them. And the black community, excuse me, is extremely homophobic. We're evolving, and it's coming along slowly but surely, and you'll see it more with the young than in the old. But the old guard, you can cancel Christmas, and and some of them ain't gonna evolve.
Now I'm not saying. Then let me make this clear. Let me make it clear.
But wait a minute. The issues look a little bit different when you talk about communities of color and the white community, because I remember the last election cycle up in North Georgia, people were complaining. They talked too much about the white people. Black people's issues. They talked too much about the poor issues.
Exactly.
So when Democrats say the issues are on the surface, and then when we come out and what we say about behind closed doors, or when we think nobody's looking, are two different things. There is an identity problem with Democrats, and they don't know whether to scratch their watches or wind their damn butts. And if they want to win, everybody's got to get on the same page.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about. We talk about hot button issues, but when we should be talking about unifying issues.
And how
they
connect.
All people eat. All people are eating. All people have to breathe. All people have to make a living. All people are, you know, there's certain things that all people, regardless of color, sexual orientation, racial identification. However it is you break us up, there are certain things that every human being on the planet needs. And those are the things we need to talk about. Those are the things that we need to be promoting. We want to move forward. The commonality of the human race. Okay? Yes, Black Lives Matter. But guess what? There's some places in Georgia where ain't enough black lives that too matter. You want to talk to them about the things that matter to them, because black folks, white folks, Hispanic, gay, women, men, children, old, everybody eats, everybody breathes, everybody needs health care, everybody needs a way to earn a living. They need education. So those are the things we need, though. Like I said again, those common things that are there for the growth of the human race. Those are the things we need to be talking about instead of we love division. We want to sit there and talk about, well, those nasty Republicans. Yeah, we know they nasty, but we cannot kill them off. We're playing the same game that they're playing. We have to be different. People think when you talk to a Republican, they will tell you that they think Republicans are, you know, kumbaya folks. Ooh, let's everybody sit around the campfire and be happy. Yes, we are. Let's talk about that. Why can't we all sit around the campfire and sing kumbaya together? Hell, we can sing Sweet Home Alabama if you want to. You know that we need to be around the same campfire. It ain't about the song, it's the campfire.
We can't see, like I said, we're not on the same page. What you want and what they want are two different things. You want to help the people. You want to see democracy actually mean something. They want money and power. One of these things is not like the other. And so the Democratic Party needs to answer that question. Like they asked us, who's on your side? Who you with? Whose side are you on? This is the tipping point. They need to decide whether do you want money and power, because here's the thing. If they win with Hillary, your party is going, this is the beginning of the end of the Democratic Party, not just in Georgia, but across the nation. They will die. Where is the Democratic Party of Alabama? There isn't one. If they do not listen, if they do not start to wake up and not only smell the coffee but drink the whole damn pot, they will win, they will have that money, and that's the last bit of money they see. And the GOP is loving this, because while we're sitting up here looking, following the bright and shiny objects, they are just marching all over Georgia, and they can give zero fucks. And I'm sorry, Mama, it's Sunday, I'm not supposed to cuss and all that, but they don't care. They love this stuff because they're making their march as we speak.
And that's the other problem, is that the truth be told, if you have any close Republican friends, they will tell you that they have their own schism going on over there. But the problem is that they are willing to hold off on killing each other off to after we done did it in for ourselves. And they said they ain't worried about fighting us, because we're doing a good enough job of not even paying attention to our own people, that we will just die off, and we will die because people will just stop supporting us. And that's what is happening. People are just stopping supporting us. You got African Americans who are sitting there saying, hey, what's the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans? It's starting to happen. I mean, that's it. That's it. And you got people asking that question out of your strong, one of your strongest base groups. You know, it's like the African Americans, me and you talked about this in maybe one of the last two shows. Yeah, all it would take is for African Americans to give at least 10 to maybe 15% of the vote to the Republican Party.
And it's because they don't want the whole block. They just want to scrape off enough.
Yeah, they just want to tap off enough of it. That's
right.
That's why we got to start talking about common issues.
And folks need to stop laughing at Rand Paul. Now, Rand Paul, yes, his when you look at his entire platform and his breadth of his policies, no, not all of it Black Lives Matter. But he's spot on by hammering in, and we're seeing, even right here in Georgia, we're seeing G GOP conservatives talking about criminal justice reform, which fits in the Black Lives Matter platform, which fits in the Latino immigration platform, and parts of it with the mass detention. They're not quite ready to go that way yet, but they're starting to evolve on this. Now,
well,
I have my
all
my,
it would
my
take for the GOP.
All
it would take for the GOP to start pulling African American votes is for some, if they could get some of their members of their party to shut the hell up and stop saying stupid racist shit.
Well, Carl Rose used to tell people
that.
Don't say shit.
Just don't say nothing. We're going to talk about what we believe in, and that's it. We're going to talk about fiscal responsibility. We're going to talk about freedom, taking freedom and liberty. If they would just stick with that, it would be a possibility that they could pull off. But once you, when people hear you say them, they, and our country back, and them type of damn words.
Yeah.
Them little power words, then we kind of know. If they would just shut the hell up. And see, and
right.
That's what needs to happen. The DPG needs to talk, and the GOP needs to shut up. Because right now it's opposite. Because
right
the DPG
now,
they don't, shit, and the Republicans doing all the talking.
They really don't need to. The DPG is not going to talk because they have too many people who are either bamboozled and hoodwinked, or they're sitting there. This is about the money. This is the come up, and Hillary's campaign is the ultimate come up. So there's a lot of people, they're not going to say anything.
Yes, it is. It is the ultimate come up. Now, if I was just straight up money driven, I ain't going to tell you no lie. I'd be kissing me some Clinton ass.
And the minute
if
I see you come in, yeah. I'm through with you. And I'm going to ask you for money.
But the thing is, I actually care about what our country stands for, what our party stands for. I believe in those values. And so I can, people talk about, well, Bernie is moving Hillary to the, why she got to be moving?
He's a Democrat. That's my big thing.
This is the thing now. Dustin Baker said it on Facebook this morning, I think. And I agreed to him to a point that, I want somebody's running for office. I want to know that my opinion, if my opinion sways a certain way, that my candidates will follow my opinion. Because that's what representative democracy is supposed to be. That if I want something, that's what you're going to give me. But however, if I got a candidate who is already there, who already aligns with me from day one,
right. Why
in the hell am I going to vote for somebody I had to convince to come to my side?
And I got to wait for you to evolve. And
I already got an evolved candidate. I don't need you to be evolving, because see, the evolved candidate can do nothing more but continue to evolve more into my position that will give me more satisfaction from a platform position. Because let's say Bernie Sanders evolves more progressive, that's better. Hillary Clinton evolving more progressive, that's her trying to get to what Bernie Sanders is.
Right.
So I would prefer to take Bernie Sanders doing the evolutionary step than Hillary Clinton.
Here's a really good example. I live in the 5th Congressional District, and I have John Lewis as my congressional rep, okay? Now, yesterday, Hillary had her campaign thing, and it was a great, very open speech where she left a lot of space. There was a lot of dead air inside that speech. But all in all, it was a great general generic speech. But she had an opportunity to actually get people fired up by talking. What was the one thing she didn't mention yesterday? The TPP.
TPP.
She could have come out and said something on the TPP and took a stand.
Exactly.
Now, I, along with other people who live in the 5th Congressional District, we blew John Lewis's phone up. We were getting, and I was getting emails from AFL-CIO, the nuns over at Network, AFL-CIO, CWA, call your people and tell them that you don't want TPP. And John Lewis got on the floor of the Senate and gave a stunning speech, which was what every Democrat should have been looking at and going back to their district and telling their people what they did. Because people don't, first of all, people don't understand that. And a lot of Democrats are coming, they're new to the TPP party. But progressives, and there have been progressive groups who have been on this for years. This ain't nothing new. This was nothing. This has nothing to do with whether you love the president or not. Because I'm tired of hearing, you know, for a lot of Dems, they see this as treason against the president. And I keep going back to the analogy, I'm a mom. I have children. Sometimes they do stupid things. I have to discipline them and chastise them. Doesn't mean I don't love them anymore. It just
the
means
president,
I don't like
well, I mean, let's
doing.
Just be honest, though. The president abandoned the party principles several years ago. I mean, there's nothing wrong with him. You know, I don't hate him.
But
I don't hold ill will for him. He is not
nothing.
A traditional Democrat.
No. The president was never any more than he pretended to be. We were just blinded by the light with the historic context of his election. We did not look deep enough to see what was already there. President Obama, really, we have to take, so for those who are disappointed at on some level, we have to take this, a lot of our hopes, our dreams, our aspirations on it and not really listen to what he said. You know, for people who were upset with him about, you know, climate control, when you heard the all-in-one strategy and the phrase clean coal, what the hell is clean coal? There is no such thing as clean coal. But we all jumped on, oh, yeah, Obama said clean coal. Yay, Obama.
Must be clean.
No, and so there were little hints there. And I used to work for attorneys. And, you know, first of all, you know, that old joke about, you know, attorneys and how to get rid of them, you know, getting rid of them would be a good start. It's kind of true. And so when you have an attorney who turns into a politician, Danger.
Oh, I got a caller. Hold on.
Danger Will Robinson.
Option.
Go ahead, caller. Tell us who you are and speak out. Caller?
Hello. Bueller?
Yes, I just called in.
Go ahead.
Hey.
You got something you
want to
say?
Hey, I'm Jamie Mitchum. I just had a quick question.
Hey,
go
Jamie.
Hey. I think one of my challenges, I'm driving back to Georgia from South Carolina where they had a meetup for Bernie Sanders folks that are wanting to get involved on I-20 right now. but I think one of the challenges some of us fear is that we're having to go up against Republicans and, in some cases, the Democratic Party as well, trying to get more attention to issues that Bernie Sanders is trying to address. And I was wanting to see where the Democratic Party is. I know they can't endorse either candidate, but what they could do to help all the candidates.
Well,
now, Scout, let's talk about what they can do in the primaries. Let's talk about what the bylaws says the Democrats can't do, but what they actually do on the low.
Right. Now, this is the thing. Now, I've read the bylaws because, see, I'm thinking that during a presidential year, this is a little bit different because under the bylaws, people who are members of the Democratic Party, that means state committee members, county party chairs, county committee people, we're not supposed to endorse a candidate, okay?
Right.
But, however, in a presidential election, we're going to have to vote for delegates to go to the national convention. And there are going to be Hillary delegates. There are going to be Sanders delegates. There are going to be delegates for every candidate who has won a delegate. Okay, so you're going to have people that are going to go up there representing them. And I remember watching this a little bit in the 2008 delegate selection. Don't know exactly how it work is going to work this time around because, it's, you know, we didn't have a challenge to the Democratic President Barack Obama. So my question is, how that is there a change, because if you look at what you're seeing from the Democratic Party, mostly it's Hillary speak. Now, you've seen the DNC put out a couple of emails and this, that, and other, and you're starting to see Hillary and Bernie's face on these things. They're in. Are you in? I'm looking forward to seeing, because what we need to be doing as Democrats is talking about the diversity of the candidates that we have on our ticket, regardless if it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I'm hoping more people will get in. And do not, because I am a supporter of Bernie Sanders, does not mean that I am endorsing Bernie Sanders.
Right,
I have no
formal
position to use my office in the DPG to promote Bernie Sanders.
Mm.
I want to see Democratic voters, I want to see progressive-minded voters engaged by the DPG, and that means the DPG is going to have to go talk to some Greens. That means they need to go talk to some Democratic socialists. That means they might even have to go talk to the socialists.
Right.
That ain't going to happen.
Right.
We need everybody in the...
But there's a distrust. Nobody trusts the Democrats, because the Democrats, that has been tried in the past. Well, there have been hands outreach, and they got screwed by the Democratic Party. Nobody trusts them.
But that's one thing
we're
going to have to do to be in the election, because what happens is that in a lot of cases, because we know in a presidential election, we know the Greens will always have the Greens will have a presidential candidate, and Greens will vote exclusively for their candidate. They will not look at the Democratic candidate. If the Democratic Socialists happen to get somebody on the ballot, they will vote for that person. The Libertarians will do such. All these third parties, which me and Stacey, at some point in time, we're going to have a conversation on the show about the third party element.
We keep talking about it. That's going to have to be exclusively a whole show.
But the thing is you have, but for Sanders' purposes, for the Democratic purposes, for us to be able to beat the Republicans and beat them soundly, and particularly in Georgia, we need to be talking to all of our brothers and sisters on the left. Green, Democrat, we know that they are running around singing the International. We know this. We cannot be scared of the red flag. We cannot be scared of it. We can't. We have to embrace them and say, hey, we all, because if anybody takes any of these political quizzes or notices about the platform, we have an 80-20 relationship with all of these groups. We agree 80% on platform together. The 20% stuff comes when it comes to dealing with stuff like the military and government involvement and foreign affairs and this, that, and other, where the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, really you can't tell the difference between the two. But in everything else, when it comes to progressive policy, we see that we match up with the Democratic Socialists. We match up with the Greens. We match up with most progressive independents. So we need to be reaching out to them.
I agree with you.
I would love to see that happen, but that is going to have to be up to not only DPG, whoever's doing outreach with them, to forming an alliance. And when you come to these people, keep it 100. You know, keep it real, because the problem is that, like I said, the lack of trust, they've been burnt before. But then it's also the people who are members of these organizations, they need to push them. But what you're not realizing is that some of these organizations have been subverted or co-opted by the Democratic Party through grant money, through donations, you know. When these campaigns come in, like I talked about earlier, the money that flows through, they flow through nonprofits. This is like money laundering that goes on, and it goes through using the nonprofit structure.
We got another caller. Let's get this call on. Good afternoon, caller. Tell us what you're thinking.
Well, I just turned on listening to you talking about the Democratic Party.
Roger, that's
but I could say something.
Go ahead.
I want to say this, though. You know, in politics, what controls politics is business. Individual people don't control politics. All they do is vote. And in Georgia, I think I know where you're coming from with the fact that, you know, you still can't take down any state positions because you outvoted. But I think that African Americans need to have more viable businesses in Georgia. Of course, there's nothing wrong with any sort of business, but viable businesses. And then you can control those politics. Because politics is what control your police departments or in around the country. But no, you got to have businesses. And not only that, businesses control the media too, because the media depends on ad dollars. And if you're saying something that, you know, don't go along with my clientele, my constituents, my consumer market, then I'm going to pull my ad dollars. Is that not what happened to Rush Limbaugh when he called a one woman a slut? He apologized after he lost 30 advertisers.
Right, and we've talked, and I've talked to a lot of folks about that, how particularly in minority communities, whether or not it's women, LGBT, African-Americans, Latinos, we understand, it's an understanding that economic development and economic power go hand in hand with political power, because you're absolutely right. You know, who spends the money to contact the voters? Where are the candidates getting that money from? They're getting that money from people who can afford to do that. The people who can afford to do that are either usually entrepreneurs or people who have very good paying jobs. You don't have the single mom who is working through two jobs and getting assistance, you know, sending her money to a political candidate.
No, she don't. No, she doesn't go to church. The church tells them to vote.
Right, and you might have grandma and grandpa who are retired send some money in, but you're not going to have young people who are struggling paycheck to paycheck sending money in to candidates. That money's coming from, you know, from business owners.
They come,
and this, that, and other.
They
this
come from
you see
the
a
big
lot
business.
Of the, right, you see a lot of slant toward that. But see, again, that's a problem, because in a democracy, it should not be business. It should not be a small portion of the population who has such a large influence over elected officials and their ability to raise money. There should be the voice of the people, and them scared of us voting them out.
That's just the way it is, and if you're going to win at the game, you got to play it. And, you know, if you just vote, then businesses will come around and buy your politicians out. They do it all the time. Look what happened in New York with the street business.
We're not just talking about voting. We're talking about being engaged citizens, because it's another thing that we've noticed. And governments are just – the governments are as guilty for this as the citizens are, because citizens don't go to government meetings. We don't go to our city council meetings. We don't go to our county commission meetings. We a lot of citizens ain't never even stepped foot inside the state capitol. But one of the problem with that is that, hey – I know most of the city councils and county commissions and whatnot meet in the middle of the day.
Well, that's an educational process. And if you don't control your schools, and I'm not talking about because your children go there. You got to control those schools so they teach what you think is best for your children. And I'm sorry to say that's not happening in public schools. So it's not a simple solution. It's a complicated solution, but it can be worked out. You got to have businesses to control your politics. If you don't, if you just voting for them, they will buy you out. Look what happened. The businesses will buy your politicians out. Look what happened in New York with Mayor Dinkins when the Koreans was upset because the street vendors was selling the same thing that people was trying to get in their stores and sell. So what did they do? They formed the Korean Association, put the money in the pocket of them politicians, and next thing you know, you had police coming down the sidewalk on horses running the vendors away. So
now, wait, hold up. I kind of, there's, like you said, it's a very nuanced conversation, but this whole conversation is based on the presumption that corporations and money has more power than the vote. All of that is used to buy your vote. And I'm from New York, and I'm familiar with Dinkins and that race up there. what happened, what you saw what the Korean Association did. What they did was they galvanized, and yes, they were business owners who got together and people who had, they used their collective power. But what they did was they drove out the vote. That's the one key, because politicians can't stay in office unless you vote for them. Politicians can't advance a corporate agenda unless they occupy that seat of power. So at the beginning and at the end, we come around to the vote. Now, everything is relative and plays into it, but at the heart of it is the vote. If they didn't need your vote, they wouldn't spend so much money to get it. And that's what people need to get out of their heads. Corporations are not that, that power that they have is artificial, because we have bought into the legend that they are this all-powerful being that cannot be defeated and that we must submit and that we need them. They need us. There's nothing that they do to us that we don't enable them by either voting for the wrong person or not voting at all. So I really, really need people to get this out of
their head. When it comes to the corporation, buying their products and their services.
Who enables corporations? Corporations make their profit because we enable them, because we buy their product.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
If
blacks owned more viable business, you know, you got 87% of black businesses gross less than $50,000 a year. That is not business power, really. You have to have businesses that
black
control.
But the black community
the median black income is about $32,000 a year. That's
but
not.
Where
you know what?
Spend
let me tell you something. Well, you don't spend it with yourself. You have to. You don't have the businesses. And if you're going to have businesses, you got to manufacture.
We don't enable them. We built these companies.
Let me explain, ma'am. You keep cutting me off. Let me explain to you. You got retail businesses that's going to Asians to buy wholesale, trying to sell what their cousins is already selling in your community. They are not going to give you family prices where you can compete with their cousin. They make it, they ship it, they bring it into the country. Until you start competing with them on that particular level, you're going to be at that status that you are when it comes down. That's why retail businesses don't stay open long, because the price is too high. Don't we always complain how much the price is? Then you go across the street to the Asian. If a Chinese restaurant don't do you right, you say, give me my money. Then you go down the street, and that one you left is just smiling, because they're all the same.
But on the flip side, now I live in Southwest Atlanta. We have Asian businesses. We have Latino businesses. And this is what I noticed. There's a Latino plaza up here. We got people, not only Latinos in the community who will shop here, we got people who will come cross town, vice versa. We have people we have Latinos on the south side of Georgia, of Atlanta, who will drive all the way to Buford Highway to shop at a Latino business. Asian Americans do the same thing. And we have Asian Americans who make their money and make their wealth off of the black community. The black community enables us. Let's take the beauty supply. I can't even remember the last time I've seen a black-owned beauty supply store, but black Americans, particularly black American women, spend billions of dollars on hair care. So how we spend our money, who we spend it with. And if there was a black business, we would do that, but black businesses don't open up. They don't provide, a lot of them are not opening up to provide the services that we need. There's a reason why in Atlanta, we will go from Southwest Atlanta and we will stop and down, we'll go to Lenox, we will go to Fifth, we will go to Perimeter, we will go to Alpharetta, before we go to South Lake, which is dying, before we go to Shannon, which is dead. All of the commercial shopping places on the south side, we have not enabled. Old National Highway, dead.
Well, it still gets back to the same thing. I live here in St. Louis. I bring my grandson down on Broad Ridge. They're in Pine View, I guess it is, right there in Stone Mountain, for baseball training. I do at least 3 or 4 times a year. So why do I travel that far to bring my grandson 500-some-odd miles to be trained for and stay about a week at a time? I stay in the Days Inn over there on North Lake across from the Target store. It's because that's in my mind how I have been educated. So it's not simple. You got to educate your children to this perspective. You got to be able to produce what it is that you are selling, because that's the only way you can control the prices, where you can compete with others that's doing the same thing in your community. Here in St. Louis, if it wasn't for the Arabs, we wouldn't have no gasoline.
Now, let me ask you a question. Since you're from St. Louis and you say you come down here to Stone Mountain at least, what you said, 3 times a year, you said?
4 times a year.
Okay, because I live in Stone Mountain, okay? And so you just ask, because I'm going to ask you a question that is dealing with, that you can help me kind of phrase something, because we're having a commission race right now for our county commission in District 5. And District 5 includes the Stone Mountain area. Now, you just said you stayed the Days Inn at North Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you stay at the hotel, the hotels at South Crest, at Stone Crest?
I don't know anything about it.
There we go.
I don't know anything about it.
Well, as a citizen of District 5, okay, in DeKalb County, I am going to ask you, when you get ready to bring your grandson back down here, that you please look into staying in a hotel at Stonecrest. The mall is right there. It's a very nice area. There are several nice hotels right there, and you'll be closer to Stone Mountain.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know anything about it, but I tell you one thing. I spend money with Brandon Phillips' father there on Broadridge, and I don't know what right there on that corner. We spend money at This Is It. We spend money at Shapley's.
Yep.
So, you know, that's the way I've been educated, and that's the way I educate him. So if you want to see that type of law, you got to teach that to your children. You got to damn near get to the point where it's child abuse and instill it into your children.
And that's it right there, and I applaud you for doing that and for taking that effort, because, it's, you know, at this point, it's an effort to do that. But I think we're probably close to the same generation. When I grew up, you didn't have to do that. It wasn't much of an effort to find black businesses. You know, even here in Atlanta, you know, you had Auburn Avenue. When I was in New York, you had such areas as 125th Street, 3rd Avenue in the Bronx. You know, there were places where in Chicago you had a black shopping district. We had those things, and we lost it. And
when I'm there in that area, I see blacks on the utility trucks. I see blacks working in black. I ain't never seen that many black police officers before. We went over to Piccadilly, and my grandson got up from the table and went over to another table where there was about 8 black police officers and shook every one of them in the hand. He said, "I don't see this where I come from." You got black women driving UPS trucks.
Let's not get it twisted now, but let's not get it twisted.
Yeah, yeah.
Black police officers, and when it comes down to it, is no different than white police officers.
Why do the communities let them get away with it? What I'm looking at is the money
because
that they're bringing home.
Because we let them get away with it.
Well, yeah, but I'm looking at the money that they're bringing home to raise kids so your kids don't have to be out on the corners with pots, pans, and buckets and begging for money.
Now, this area is supposed to be, at one time, I don't know if the statistics still are the same, but at one time, this was the second wealthiest African-American population in the country. Now, I don't know if that's changed or not, because I know we were in high competition with the folks over in Houston. But I know the wealthiest population was actually in Maryland, and I think it was Prince William or Prince George County outside of D.C. But I can agree with you on that. It's a very well, and that's why the Democratic base here I just went to a forum yesterday. Like I said, we got a special election for a commission race. We have 10 candidates running in this race. All Democrats, all African Americans. They're from their mid 30s all the way up to their 70s. I'm very proud of that fact to see that many Democrats come out and vote, come out and run for office. That they're all very intelligent, well educated, and well intentioned African Americans. You know, now I don't watch some races in some other places where I'm like, where do you get him from? Where you get her from? And why are they running for office? Because you got some.
Well, you know another thing.
You
know another thing, sister? We don't have no agenda. What do you want them to do? You know what I'm saying?
Right. We may not have an agenda. You know, people say
we
don't have an agenda.
For?
But we have some pretty good ideas that make. We may not have a full platform laid out over everything that's going to do that's magically going to transform our community overnight. But what I do know is that for my 50-plus years on Earth, we have talked about quite a bit of ideas, and we are talking about the same thing that Dr. King and others in the Civil Rights Movement have talked about that, and we have done nothing. If Dr. King would have come back today, the Boondocks did an excellent cartoon about that.
The way it's supposed to be is that people come together, see a need, they choose somebody out of their community to run for a particular office, they support them financially. That's the most important thing. If you don't support them financially, and that's why I get back to the businesses, because people that's putting $20 a week in the pot at the church don't have that extra money to be financing politicians the way they should to, then it's not going to work the way it's supposed to. It's going to be hit and miss like what we've seen. Them politicians that's been in all, you know, they complain about Gaddafi was in for 40 years. They complain about Mugabe. Hell, you got Don Conyers has been in Detroit for 40 years. You got Wrangles has been in there over near 40 years. And what the hell have you got to show in all these cases? We have Clay's here in St. Louis, been in office. His father was 32 years, and he's been in 16 years.
Yeah, we've got some things going on.
And that is a problem.
And, Scout, I'm glad. Yeah. One of the problems, we got a problem, and I hope we can talk about this real quick. The House District 55 race in Atlanta, Tyrone Brooks' old seat.
Right,
it is a hot mess. And people need to be hollering about this.
Is that there's supposed to be an injunction placed by the judge to get Tyrone Brooks Jr. back on the ballot, but she don't want to hold the hearing until 2 days after the election over. What kind of craziness is that?
And Kemp is saying he's going to defy any order. So what we have is
a setup.
But here's the thing. What's really dangerous is that the election is scheduled for Tuesday, the 16th.
Right.
Right now, as it stands, if you go in and vote and you look in on there, when you push that, when that screen comes up, you're going to see Tyrone Brooks' name. Now, most people who are, because this district is one of those gerrymandered districts. If you look at the district and how it is, it looks like a weird kind of guitar. It comes from South Buckhead through Atlanta, a small strip of the city of Atlanta, and then out in Southwest Atlanta. It goes out to Brooklyn Road area. And it's very, very, very different demographics in this district. But this is a chance for the Republicans to pick up a seat. There's an independent who came out and said, we're going to slide in and get the seat. He's running as an independent. He's got these signs. You don't see them. You know, and on the South, in black neighborhoods, the way to get the vote is a bit different strategy. You get a whole bunch of signs and you put them up there. And you've got
Stacey, isn't that the one where the quarterback from Georgia Tech is running in?
The quarterback from
Taylor Bennett?
Yes. And you've got a guy,
Ragu, I may be mispronouncing his name.
Let me ask y'all a question. Your school district is pretty big. Who controls the lunch program? Who provides the food for the kids to eat in your school district?
Cisco Foods provides the food for, they have the contract for most of the major schools.
Well, what I'm getting at, those should be black businesses that control that. It don't make sense for a company from France to be taking that type of revenue out of your district, taking it back to France. It's crazy.
But who makes the decision to get these contracts to the school system?
It's supposed to be your school board.
And how do the school boards get that power?
Yeah, well, you give it to them, and you should be able to take it from them too.
Right.
But
you
understand what I'm saying. You understand what I'm saying. I'm not trying to solve everything on here, but when you got those big type of bleeding of revenue in your school district, for one, and I don't know what else is, but I'm sorry, we have to control those. We can't let that kind of money leave out. Then the next thing is where you put gasoline. Who owns the gasoline stations that you put gas in your car? That's one of your next biggest expenses.
But you control it by knowledge. Knowledge, you know, knowledge leads to information. And money is not powerful. Information is powerful. Information directs the money. Information tells the money where to go and how it can be powerful. So people, and we have the internet, we have an amazing wealth of information that we can get very quickly that we weren't able to get 20, 30 years ago. People need to use it.
I need to break in for just a second because I need the problem because you talked about the house rate 55, and I wanted to talk about.
Yes, my head's about to explode.
Because I got 3 minutes. I got a little bit over 3 minutes left, and I wanted to quickly talk about the District 5 race in DeKalb County. They had one of their last forums last night with the Young Democrats of DeKalb. Half of the candidates showed up. Half of them didn't, and let me quickly run over that so the listeners here will know exactly who was there and who wasn't. We had Miss Green, Von Ines, Dr. Rice was there, Kenneth Saunders showed up, and Mr. George Turner and Jim Mayhem. Now, people have been asking me what I thought about this race, and one of the things I can sit there and say that has changed for me from the first forum that I watched it, as I watched it evolve, that everybody and their mama is trying to throw the kitchen sink at Von Ines. I mean, everybody's trying to catch the dude in some kind of malfeasance because he has been investigated before. But like he said yesterday, everybody from the federal government down to the local DA has investigated what he's done and found no problem. So why are we still talking about it? He said all of these have done bring economic development to the area. And my thing was is that you have candidates that are spending all their time attacking Von Ines instead of talking about what they want to do. They ain't doing nothing but help Von. They're going to help Von win because everybody's saying his name. They don't even know you. They don't even know your name, but they know Von Ines because you keep speaking his name. If you think that man's corrupt, stop saying his name. Because guess what?
Wow.
In politics, the more name recognition you get, the more likely is he going to win. So you don't even tell us who you are. You just vote against Von Ines. You don't need to let Von Ines win. You don't need to let Von Ines. I'm like, really? And you never at one end point did I hear anybody say, vote for me. All everybody was basically, don't vote for Von Ines. That is crazy.
It is in a way, but they do need to bring up because when we're talking about the 5th District out there in DeKalb County, and part of the problem is, you know, with Von Ines is that contract while he was, with the DeKalb County Development Authority. And, you know, some of the problems that they're dealing with and some of the issues that came up was because there was no one helming that district. And what he did with that deal was problematic. So I do hear you know, in terms of running politics, but Von Ines needs to understand, if you're running for office, we can't forget about that. And he's got an issue. He needs to talk about it, and he needs to put out a message that's going to kill all that noise. Yes, this, you know, let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yesterday, I think he did. He finally questioned that. Now, one other thing. They asked a question yesterday, and we got about 30 seconds left in the show here. They asked a question yesterday about Druid Hill annexation. And to the number, even Dr. Rice said that she did not believe that the city of Atlanta should be annexing Druid Hill. Now, this is Cityhood Queen saying that the Druid Hill should not leave, should not be joining with the city of Atlanta. Now, that said volumes to me. Now, we got this is the last of this series we were having on the Democratic and Hopeless in Georgia. Stay tuned.
But we won't stop
talking about
the
next weeks. You're going to be surprised at how we're going to tackle this subject. This is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith and Stacey Hopkins. See you next week.
Peace.